Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty here on an Overreaction Monday. Get at us on the CNG Twitter line at Mike Golic Jr. at Chris Canty 99. And Gojo, right now, we got to go out to the CNG hotline to bring on our very own Dominique Foxworth, the undefeated ESPN NFL analyst. And Dominique, I know we've been trying to get you on the show for a while now. It hasn't necessarily worked out, but I can understand why you would be intimidated coming on with the UVA graduate. Everybody.
It wasn't intimidation. Let's get that clear.
Okay.
It was a negotiation that came down to, I'm not coming on unless you start me out with international players. I asked them, and we see I got my way. The only way I come on the show is if you type a text to a girl I used to see. That's all I need to know. And so just so you know, Gojo, I got your back like chiropractic. I'm here for you anytime you need me, brother. I don't know about that Virginia guy.
See how these Route 1 guys do. But anyway, Dom, let's get to it, man. Last night we had an epic game between the Bills and the Chiefs, and that led to everybody and their mama having an opinion about the NFL overtime rules. Do you feel like they need to be changed, or you think that the status quo is good enough?
Anybody who left last night and wants to talk about overtime rules, like, that was a religious experience watching that game. I don't give a damn about any rules. Whatever rules led us to have that game last night, everything that took place in the entire arc of all of history, from the Big Bang to what happened last night, everything was worth its compromise for us to get that experience. Like, I don't care about the overtime rules. I don't care about them squibbing. I don't care about Andy Reid running a speed option with a tight end. I know that last night was outstanding. That's all I know.
God, so you're in favor of the Titans really being a one seed this year. That's amazing.
That's the one I'll go back on, because they aren't a one seed. They're not a one seed, as we saw.
Yeah, that became very apparent in that one. So, Dominique, overtime aside in that game here, for Josh Allen going forward here, this has been a guy that we've watched kind of steadily progress over the last few years. Consistency has been the one thing that people called into question. Are you ready to put a lot of that stuff to bed? Like, is it just as simple as saying that's one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL and we just kind of move on at this point?
Oh, yeah. I think the Josh Allen question got put to bed last season. I think he came up with a new question this season by how well he's been playing. Is he the best? Was he good enough? I think the answer was resoundingly no after his first two seasons. And he had a statistical and on-field leap that, honestly, I don't think there's a comp for. Like, no one's ever gotten that much better in one offseason. I think it's a credit to him, his self-awareness, his commitment, and the people around him. But then this season, I wasn't asking, like, is Josh Allen a starting quarterback, which was the question I think a lot of us were asking before this season. I was asking, like, how good is he? And he was up and down through portions of this season. But what he did in the last few weeks, I guess there was one dud in there, but the two New England games and then yesterday's game, yeah, we have a new question, is like, how good is he? Is he the best in the league? And I guess Patrick Mahomes would say the answer is no. But as good as they both were last night, I don't think we got an answer to that question. Because I think we all believe if Josh got the ball back, he was putting up six.
Talking with ESPN NFL analyst Dominique Foxworth on Canty and Golic Jr. And Dom, the game that brought out all the memes was the 49ers against the Green Bay Packers, and Aaron Rodgers catches a fade from Jimmy Garoppolo and the 49ers. And I got to ask you, breaking out your crystal ball, do you think this loss puts Aaron Rodgers in a spot where he's more likely to return to the Packers, or is it more likely that he ends up elsewhere this coming season?
Yeah, I don't think this loss changes anything. I think the Packers would still love to have him back. I don't think it changes his views on things. It feels like he's pretty hard and fast in his views, and there are very few things that can change his opinion. So whatever he was feeling at the beginning of the season, I think he feels the same way about them right now. So he caught the fade, as you said, from Jimmy Garoppolo, but the best part of that game came at the end when he caught the fade from the entire internet. That was just priceless memes and jokes for everybody throughout the course of that evening. But I do think that because of the restructuring of his contract, like, I think he's more likely to go. At least that's what I've been hearing. I guess I haven't talked to anybody since after that game, but throughout the course of the season, not very many people on the inside thought that Aaron was coming back.
So we got Aaron Rodgers potentially on the move there. The internet getting off every immunized joke they could possibly tie back to NFL football, which was spectacular. But Dominique, we also had something happen this weekend, and I saw you tweeting about this. Matthew Stafford may have overcome one of the more severe cases of lemon booty that we have ever seen. We almost had a 27-3 comeback to Tom Brady to add to the 28-3 meme and all of that. So how did Matthew Stafford finally change the tide? Like, is he another one where we're done asking questions about Matthew Stafford and whether this was the right move?
Whether we should be done or not is a different question, but I think we are done. That's what one play can mean in the playoffs in these situations, because he did overcome the lemon booty. I don't know what the opposite of a lemon booty is, because I feel like there is no fruit that I want to associate it with Matthew Stafford's booty, but he was comfortable in that situation. I do believe that. He was comfortable. Whatever fruit is symbolic of being comfortable, that's the one we put with Matthew Stafford. But it's funny how these things work. It comes down to moments, and he was big in that moment. We're going to forget the fact that he tried his damnedest to throw that red zone interception at the beginning of the game, which would have changed the complexion of all of this. Like, that was bad. He overthrew some people in some other clutch situations. That wasn't good. But at the end of the game, his numbers were great, and he had an iconic signature play. And that's all we're going to remember. No one's going to go through and break down how this all panned out, and how Von Miller and Aaron Donald were probably just more impactful on the outcome of this game than Matthew Stafford. We all remember Matt Stafford, the Cooper Cup, down the middle of the field. That's the game. That's the play we're going to remember. And we're going to remember Matt Stafford as a clutch playoff performer because of it. Like, you can never go back to that trope, or not trope, but that narrative about Matt Stafford shriveling in the big moments. He made the play that needed to be made at that moment.
Yeah, Dom, and I'm hearing you on Matt Stafford, but he's going into the NFC Championship game. He's going to be hosting it against the San Francisco 49ers, a team that the Rams have lost six straight to. If Matt Stafford doesn't deliver in this spot, doesn't that kind of spark that conversation back up about him not being able to deliver in the biggest moment when his team needs to? Because when you look at the head-to-head matchup, I mean, this is going to be the most favorable for him throughout the course of the playoffs so far.
I think it might, but I actually think that what changed yesterday is that the way Matt Stafford plays is going to matter. If he plays poorly, then we'll talk about him that way. If he plays mediocre and they still lose, I don't think we talk about him that way. But I do think, had he not had that comeback, if they would have blown out the Bucs and then they lost and he had like a mediocre performance, the narrative wouldn't have been Matt Stafford let them down. And I think he avoided that much. So if he can be mediocre to good, no matter the outcome, obviously he cares, but I don't think the narrative on him changed. That play was that big to me in the way that we're going to talk about and remember Matt Stafford. Unless he just lays an egg and throws three interceptions or something like that, then I honestly think that we're done talking about him as a regular season quarterback who can't get it done in the playoffs.
So if we're looking for the opposite of lemon booty, our producer Shannon has said that pineapples apparently equal hospitality. How comfortable, Dominique, are you with pineapples and Matthew Stafford's booty?
I'm not at all. I got to be honest with you. I said at the top, I'm not comfortable with any fruit associated with Matt Stafford's booty, except for when he was choking, I put the lemon out there. So I think we're just going to – we need to find another, maybe a vegetable. I might be able to go vegetable, but I can't go fruit.
All right, listen, check him out on Twitter, at Foxworth24, and tweet Dominique the vegetable that he should be most comfortable associating with Matthew Stafford's booty.
Wow.
Read him over at The Undefeated. Check him out on GetUp. Dominique, we love you, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Love you, too. Mike.
Wow, okay, that's where we at with it? All right, cool.
Ooh, man, not even UGK could mend these two fences
right?
Here between old ACC foes. That's cold-blooded right there.
I mean, I just gave him a little nudge. I mean, he off the top rope just now, made it clear where he was at with it. It's okay.
Deeply that's personal. All right, you know what? We'll keep getting him back around here. We'll try and coax Dominique back in with UGK, see if we can mend some fences around here. Because we want to be an Everybody Love Everybody show, but we understand sometimes conflict will give you the best possible results through all of this. We'll get to that point in a little bit. But coming up next, speaking of conflicts, we had it on full display this weekend. Two all-time greats now going to go home and be watching the playoffs with the rest of us. Which one of them is more likely to actually walk back onto an NFL field in 2022? We'll answer that question next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Reaction Monday on Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance in a crazy divisional round weekend that left us with a lot of questions. We want to throw out a question to you guys. Which NFL rule would you like to see change, whether it be taunting, the overtime rule, or the personal fouls? Hit us up on the C&G hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN. That's 888-729-3776. But Gojo, we got to get into the premature exits of Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, because I don't think a whole lot of people had those guys being bounced in the divisional round of this thing. Of course, the Green Bay Packers were taking on the sixth seed in the San Francisco 49ers. And then Tom Brady at home in the divisional round taking on the LA Rams. Throughout his career, Brady was 12-1 at home in the divisional round. So the fact that the Bucs came up short and that the game, for the most part, was as one-sided as it was a huge surprise. So that left us with the question of whether or not the early exits from the postseasons for both quarterbacks means that it's likely that we're not going to see those guys again. I know my answer to that question is no. I think we'll see Tom Brady back in a Bucs uniform next year. I think Aaron Rodgers comes back too next year, although I don't think it'll be with the Green Bay Packers. What say you?
Yeah, I'm with you on that one on both counts. Tom Brady, there's no way he's going out like this. I mean, inches from a 27-3 comeback here, having all of us question our sanity, the deal he made with the devil, all of it was on the table in that game when we saw them start to come back on the Los Angeles Rams like that. 45 was a number Tom Brady talked about a lot, wanting to play to that age, that desire, especially on his way out of New England. So I don't think he's going to be able to give that up. Aaron Rodgers is the interesting one for me, Chris, because you and I talked about this last week. I thought if we had to handicap it going into this weekend, I expected Aaron Rodgers to win, and I expected what we saw over the course of this season, a lot of the mended fences to go a long way in his relationship, making it a place he wanted to stay in Green Bay from here on out. But we heard him talk about this after the game, specifically Aaron Rodgers, the Packers quarterback, talking about being a part of a rebuild being nothing that he wants. And Chris, once I heard that, that was the mic squarely handed back to Brian Gutekunst, that front office, and saying, unless you guys can present me with what you're going to do, the plan that lies ahead for us about how you're going to get a team back here that's not taking a massive step back from the one I played on this year, the one that went 33-9 in the, or however many it was, I think it's 39-9 in the last three seasons. Unless you can find me a team and show me how we're going to get to that point here, that sounds like a guy that's looking with a foot out the door right now. And you can understand based on what he has said out there and based on quite left, frankly, Chris, what's left in his legacy conversation, unless they can present him with that plan, it's going to be him having to find that win that he desperately needs in the postseason elsewhere.
Yeah, Gojo, but when we bring up the legacy conversation, let's not let Aaron Rodgers' offseason in 2022 mask the fact that he came up massively short in a spot where he was supposed to deliver. He's going up against Jimmy Garoppolo, a quarterback who, from the account of the 49ers brass, isn't good enough to win you the big game, and he lost at home in snowy conditions at Lambeau Field. Like, it just doesn't make any sense to me that Aaron Rodgers would automatically just jump to that part, because when you look at this Green Bay Packers team, it's a top-10 offense and a top-10 defense, and that defense, by the way, only gave up a grand total of 6 points to the 49ers offense. The touchdown that was scored was off of a blocked punt, so Aaron Rodgers is out of excuses as to why he can't come up with wins in big spots, especially at home. He's 2-3 over the last three postseasons. That's just not good enough in terms of the expectation that we have for Aaron Rodgers being able to deliver. He's got to come through in those types of spots. And the fact that he had a 19.4 QBR going up against what a lot of people would say was the weakest quarterback in the playoff field, I just don't know how we start to look at Aaron Rodgers as one of those quarterbacks that belongs in that GOAT conversation when we talk about Tom Brady, when we talk about Joe Montana, Peyton Manning, and John Elway. I don't think that Aaron Rodgers' resume dictates that he belongs in that kind of company, and the performance that he had Saturday night makes me feel justified in having that opinion.
Yeah, Chris, there's no way. And I've been someone who defended Aaron Rodgers, the football player, for a while because of how he made us feel, right? We do not get the game between Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen on Sunday night without what Aaron Rodgers has done in his career. I think he's been that impactful stylistically on the game of football, what his physical gifts gave to the game. But at some point with those conversations, like the top 1% of the 1%, yeah, no, we saw very clear as day on that day. Aaron Rodgers had the chances and failed. Tom Brady got his team somehow, inexplicably. We know there were other people involved in all that. But it was exactly, no one was surprised, Chris, when Tom Brady and the Bucs somehow managed to come back from that game. Dominique Foxworth, who we just had on, said, I don't know what the score would have to be for me to turn off a Tom Brady game with him down, but 27-3 is not it. 28-3 wasn't it. And I think that alone shows you the gap between the two. That's the only reason I say, Chris, that the stakes got raised for what he does next, because if he wants into any part of that, if he leaves, goes somewhere like Denver that everyone rumors him to, and somehow manages to capture another Super Bowl there, we reignite all that. But he understands now, looking back at this roster that's been had its praises sung all season long, if that's not going to be in that place, clearly he's going to need a little more help than he bargained for going forward.
Well, here's what I will say. If he does go to another organization, the pressure on him only gets ratcheted up, because if he doesn't deliver a championship and he handpicks his next situation, then that's going to be on him. We're going to question how great Aaron Rodgers truly is. The whole conversation about him being the best thrower of the football of a generation, all of that stuff goes away if he can't do more high-level winning. And by that, I mean being able to get to the conference championship game and then elevate the talent around him in order to get back to a Super Bowl. For a quarterback that's supposed to be as good as Aaron Rodgers is, the fact that he's only been to one Super Bowl in, what, 17 seasons? That does make you raise an eyebrow. Before, we were supposed to believe that Mike McCarthy was the issue, and now you got a head coach in Matt LaFleur who, since he's got there, including the playoffs, is 43-13. At some point, it's not about everybody else. It has to be about you. You're the common denominator, and the fact that you can't get your team there when everybody claims that you're the best quarterback in the game, that sounds a little suspect to me. So I do think his legacy took a hit on Saturday night. And moving forward, what he does, he better make his next move his best move, because he's not going to get in that GOAT conversation unless he gets back to another Super Bowl.
So the question will be asked, will Aaron Rodgers be making moves out of Green Bay? Making moves and Aaron Rodgers. That's because, like we said, like Chris said, that was a letdown performance for the ages. Coming up next, though, we will tell you which player may have had his stock jump more than any this NFL division round weekend. We'll get to that after this word from Body Armor. Now, guys, let Body Armor Light help you achieve your fitness goals this year. Body Armor Light's the low-calorie sports drink that's hydrating your active lifestyle. It's got no artificial sweeteners, no sugar added, only 20 calories per 16-ounce bottle, and it has got a stranglehold on my younger brother Jake's existence. He doesn't know how to wake up without it. He cannot live without it at this point. He has tried all the delicious flavors like peach mango, tropical coconut, strawberry lemonade. I see pictures of them empty in his garbage can that he sends me every day as he thirsts for more. That can be you. Body Armor Light can keep you hydrated during your workouts and your busy day. From now until April 30th, buy $20 of any Body Armor product, and you're going to earn $10 in fitness cash towards select fitness retailers nationwide. Learn more at bacommittofit.com. That's bacommittofit.com. Are we done hassling Matthew Stafford yet? Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Let's go out to the C&G hotline and bring on Sydney in Georgia. Sydney, what overtime rule? Well, which rule would you like changed? Which NFL rule do you want to see changed after this weekend's games? Sydney? I guess we don't have Sydney on the line.
A lot of weird breathing going on there. Let's try Bruce in Richmond instead and pray to God he's there. Bruce, you're on Kenny and Golic Jr. What do you got?
Okay, guys. So Friday, I called. We chopped it up for a minute. Y'all said I was on the sauce, but I called my shot. Golic and Kenny, I called my shot. I said the quarterback to watch out for was Matthew Stafford. And you guys laughed at me. And you said, Bruce, you on the sauce, man. But, hey, man, y'all remember the call, don't you? Your producer, you hit me up.
Bruce, I remember the call. Yes. Bruce. I will say this. Matt Stafford did his thing, and they won the game down in Tampa after trying to find a lot of creative ways to give it away. But there's no way you can look at that performance that Matt Stafford had and say that it's better than what you saw from Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes last night.
Hell no. I gotta agree with y'all on that. That was epic what you saw from Josh Allen and Pat Mahomes last night. But the point that you guys were chopping it up, and I said, watch out for this Rams. This team has been built to go to the chip. And my whole take was, as in last year, you had the home team playing for the chip. This year, you will have the home team playing for the chip. I foresee Kansas City winning it, but they will be at home playing for the chip in SoFi.
And they will also be at home playing for the NFC Championship in SoFi. So Bruce gets his victory lap, and rightly so, Bruce. We appreciate the call on that one. He was high on Matthew Stafford going into the weekend. And Chris, with good reason. Like, I think the point he brought up there and the point we talked to Dominique Foxworth about earlier on the show, I think we can now say we're done hassling Matthew Stafford. They made the move to bring him over here so that they could have a quarterback who was the reason why they were winning. And we saw that in the critical moments yesterday. He wasn't just a passenger like he was during Wild Card Weekend. He went out and was the reason. And on a weekend where we saw the 49ers have to basically overcome their quarterback in Green Bay, I think that sort of drives home exactly why they made this move.
Yeah, I mean, Matt Stafford and that Rams team was able to hang on in that second half when the Bucs decided that they were going to try to come from behind. And you saw late in that third quarter, like some of the miscues that Rams team had. You were wondering whether or not Stafford would wilt under pressure, and he didn't, literally or figuratively. And the fact that Todd Bowles came with that zero blitz at the end of the game, that opened the door for Matt Stafford to be the hero and deliver an absolute dime to Cooper Kupp. I'm not sure why Todd Bowles would call that play in that situation. I'm not sure why Antoine Winfield Jr. decided he wanted to sit on an underneath route knowing that Cooper Kupp was streaking down the field. But I guess that's beside the point. The fact is that Matt Stafford executed when his team needed him to. And when we have the conversation about some of the best quarterbacks in the game, competitive greatness always comes up. Being at your best when your best was required. And Matt Stafford stepped up and made a big-time play, big-time throw for his team. So you give credit where credit is due. And the fact that they were able to build that lead early on the road in Tampa, That was the perfect game script in terms of making sure that he stayed out of situations that could lead to him making turnover-worthy plays. And, you know, by all accounts, that's what he did. I mean, the turnover with the bad snap from Brian Allen, that's not on him. That's on the center not knowing the snap count. So a relatively clean game from Matt Stafford, and that's exactly what the Rams needed from him in order to have a chance against the defending champs.
Well, and Chris, I think that's just it, right? The mistakes that we saw down the stretch of the game that almost gave it away for the Rams – that Brian Allen snap, Cam Akers and the fumbles that we saw there. Even Cooper Kupp, who had been their best, like MVP caliber player this season, with a fumble to kind of kickstart that party. None of that traced back to Matthew Stafford, who after the end of the regular season, we were all waiting to make that mistake. And instead, Chris, the mistake inexplicably, I love Todd Bowles. I think Todd Bowles is going to be a head coach in this league again very soon. He has led a defensive resurgence there, going back to Tom Brady's first season in Tampa Bay. And even before that, I think a lot of the reason Tom looked at Tampa and liked it was because Todd Bowles had them playing at a top five level before he even got there. But yeah. Chris, you're a smarter defensive mind than me. Can you explain why in God's green earth Todd Bowles was calling a zero blitz on that final play to Cooper Kupp that ultimately allowed the touchdown? Because I cannot.
Only thing I can think of, Gojo, is that he was trying to keep them away from field goal range. You'll notice that a lot of defensive coordinators will get aggressive with the play calls the closer that the opposing team gets to field goal range. And so the Rams having the ball on, what, the 44-yard line, I guess that was his logic, like trying to keep them from being able to get a couple of plays in and see if they can set up the go-ahead field goal. So that's why he was being aggressive. It still doesn't make any sense to me, though. Like, I just don't understand why you don't have a two-deep safety look. And if you want tight underneath coverage, then go with cover five. Go with two-man and see where the chips fall with that and let your pass rush go to work. But the fact that you sit that zero blitz under that circumstance, I think that's an indictment on what the pass rush for the Buccaneers did all game long, because Joe Noteboom, who stepped in at left tackle for Andrew Whitworth, was blocking my former teammate JPP to sleep. And I had to put it out there on Twitter, and I don't like saying that about my former teammates because I got a lot of love for him, and he's made a lot of big plays in this league, And he was the catalyst for them winning a championship last year on 100%. The defensive side. But we got to call it what it is. And that offensive line for the LA Rams absolutely dominated that game against the Tampa Bay Bucs. And if you, yeah, and you know this, Gojo, based on how that defense is built, if that front seven isn't absolutely dominant when it comes to stopping the run and pass rush, then it's going to be a long day on the back end of that defense. And that's exactly what we saw from that Matt Stafford-led Rams offense.
It was the number one team. No team in football sent more blitzers, blitzed more than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and Todd Bowles defense. Matthew Stafford and the Rams came in with the number one QBR in football against the blitz. We said one of those things was going to have to give, and that giving was done on the side of the defending champs, who are now shown an early exit. Matthew Stafford, we always say, if you want to be the man, you got to beat the man. Well, he did it. So right now, I think that makes Matthew Stafford the man. But coming up next, that may have been the biggest stock-up moment for any NFL quarterback this weekend, but I don't know if it was the most impressive thing that we saw, because coming up next, we got one quarterback and one team that are content to break everything I thought I knew about football. We'll get to that next here, Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Courtesy of ESPN 1530, this is Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. We want you to hit us up on the CNG hotline on which NFL rule would you like to see changed. Is it the taunting rule, the overtime rules, or personal fouls? Hit us up on the CNG hotline, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And Gojo, one of the upsets, well, I don't even know if we can call it an upset, that we saw this weekend was the number one seed Tennessee Titans losing to the Cincinnati Bengals. And I feel like a lot of folks out there going into this weekend felt like that was a spot where you could see one of the one seeds going down. A lot of disrespect was headed the Titans' way in terms of their ability to be able to compete in this game and whether or not they could actually make it to the conference championship game. And it feels like the skepticism that people had about Tennessee was rightly so, because as we know, Evan McPherson hits that game-winning field goal that was essentially gifted to him by Ryan Tannehill throwing that late-game pick. And now we're talking about the Cincinnati Bengals going into Arrowhead rather than the Kansas City Chiefs going to Nashville.
Chris, I am glad you mentioned Evan McPherson, because we heard the tale from Joe Burrow about the swaggy kicker going out there with all that confidence. I know this has been a show that's not traditionally pro kicker.
We got to say that, because Evan McPherson said, well, it looks like we're going to the AFC Championship game before he actually kicked the football. So really impressive. I'm still not ready to call him a football player. Still not there yet.
Okay.
He's firmly a human being, but he's not quite a football player, not yet.
All right, there we go. So, Evan McPherson, you have earned your humanity in Chris Candy's eyes over the course of this weekend. Football player status, still TBD on that one. We'll wait and see what he does in the AFC Championship game. Because, Chris, all of what you just mentioned, like, I want to rewind to last year in the Super Bowl, because Patrick Mahomes was getting ready to face the Tampa Bay Buccaneers without an offensive line. Mitchell Schwartz, out of that one here. Eric Fisher, out of that one. Both gone with injury. They were so banged up. And I still said, Patrick Mahomes is enough. And I picked them in the Super Bowl. And a weird part of me was satisfied after, because I was like, all right, the things I thought I knew about football are still true. Like, the line of scrimmage still matters at an overwhelming level. As complicated as the game is, it is simple. You got to block and tackle first and foremost. The Titans sacked Joe Burrow 9 times this weekend in a football game played in 2022, and they lost that. So, Chris, once again, I am left to ponder my mortality, the fate of the known universe, all because of Joe Burrow being that bad a dude. Like, Chris, this was an upset to me, because in a game where you're sacked 9 times, that should not be the case. You should not be able to overcome that the way that Joe Burrow and the Titans did. I know a lot of that goes to Ryan Tannehill making mistakes, but Chris, there is just something different about the way Joe Burrow is built right now, and it is changing the way fans in Cincinnati get to think about themselves and their team.
No doubt about it. And Joe Burrow being able to have that kind of poise under duress had to be the most impressive aspect of that game, Gojo. Because Jeffrey Simmons, I know we talk a lot about Aaron Donald being the best defensive player in all of football. Let me tell you, number 98 for the Tennessee Titans, he ain't that far behind. He had a 3-sack performance. The guy's an absolute game wrecker. And you can go back to several games throughout the course of the 2021 season and point to him being the reason why the Titans came out on the winning side. And so that absolutely should have been the case on Saturday afternoon down in Nashville. But I think you just got to attribute the fact that the Titans lost to Joe Burrow having poise under pressure. And that throw that he made to Ja'Marr Chase at the end of that game, after Ryan Tannehill throws the interception, they get the ball around midfield. It's two-man coverage against the Cincinnati Bengals, and everybody in their mama knows that Ja'Marr Chase is getting the ball. Ja'Marr Chase runs a deep out, and Joe Burrow puts it right on him. Jackrabbit Jenkins is trailing him. There's no way he can make a play on the ball. But again, he sets his team up for success. Ja'Marr Chase easily gets out of bounds, sets up the go-ahead field goal. It's just really impressive to see him down the stretch at the critical moments of the game making the requisite plays that it takes in order for his team to win. That is an uncanny ability for a guy in his second season in the National Football League, JoJo. Like, to think the Cincinnati Bengals have had this quick turnaround, going from a team that had the number one overall pick 2 years ago to a team that's now in the AFC Championship game.
It's insane. They're here so far ahead of schedule, Chris. I saw Dan Orlovsky say this morning on Get Up, it's one of the greatest two-year turnarounds in the history of the NFL. And I don't think he's wrong, Chris. Like, the Cincinnati Bengals are going to walk into next year the most dangerous team in football because their offensive line's never going to be this bad again. Now that you've got a directive this offseason, like, you have got such a clear area of need to throw free agency money at, to throw draft picks at, whatever combination you see necessary, you have got the one clear place you need to upgrade on an offense with 2,000-yard receivers, a 1,000-yard rusher, and a 4,000-yard passing quarterback. Like, all of that in there, Chris, they're going to walk into next season armed and dangerous because you've also got, and you just mentioned it, a quarterback that everyone can look to. That's what we saw in the AFC divisional round with the Bills and Chiefs, right? Two quarterbacks that everyone in your team could look to when the going got tough and said, 13 seconds? Pfft. All right, we got Pat Mahomes. What's it matter? Joe Burrow inspires that level of confidence, and in a franchise that has been mired in mediocrity for so long here, you have got to be worried all of a sudden once they start thinking highly of themselves because that one dude has allowed them to.
Yeah, no doubt. And we've seen Joe Burrow do this routinely throughout the course of this season. All you got to do is go back to the 3rd-and-27 that he and Ja'Marr Chase converted in order to set them up to beat Kansas City at the end of the regular season. Like, the fact that he's able to make those plays instills confidence in the rest of the guys in that locker room. And so I know that the line for the AFC Championship opened up with Chiefs laying seven-point favorites. Gojo, I got to tell you, man, I feel like taking the Cincinnati Bengals and the points in this one, and I don't think I'm crazy in that because this kid, Joe Burrow, just has something special about him. And so when we have the conversation about the best quarterbacks in the AFC and the best quarterbacks in all the NFL, this Joe Burrow guy, through this playoff performance, is starting to insert himself in a lot of those talks.
Yeah, I know we just talked about Josh Allen being in that top three going into next year. You got my word. If Joe Burrow pulls this off, he's top two, and he might not be two walking into next season because doing it essentially without an offensive line would be one of the most impressive things I have ever seen on a football
and doing
field.
It in Cincinnati, too.
Coming up next, speaking in places where winning is hard, what the hell was Sean McDermott thinking at the end of that game? Next.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.